someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
He's an accomplished conductor, a noted organist, and an award-winning musical educator who lives and breathes music. His calling has led him to Howard University to touch the lives of students and the hearts of a community in worship. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is the Director of Chapel Music at the Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel, Mr. Ned Lewis. Welcome. So, Mr. Lewis, you were born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana. Tell us what that was like. What was your family life like at the time that you were raised in Shreveport?
Yes. Well, I was raised, of course, in Shreveport, Louisiana. My parents were older, but quite strict. We were very church-going people. I actually began music early and played in the church early. And so my parents kind of guide me and direct me there. Of course, I attend public schools there, and I studied music there, and that's where we were. We were just a family that loved music and also loved the church.
How many siblings do you have?
I have one sibling who is 11 years older than I am.
Okay.
Yes.
So you were much younger, but you said you absolutely fell in love with it. So that took you to Fisk University.
Yes.
So tell me what it was like being at Fisk, obtaining a bachelor's degree in music education.
It was wonderful. I always had the dream of attending Fisk because of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. I entered there, of course, pursuing a degree in music education, and organ performance was my concentration. I always wanted to look at being a university organist, and so Fisk actually trained me for that, and when I got there, they were very cordial. They gave me scholarships. They helped me to pursue a full fellowship to the next institution, so it was great.
And you went to University of Michigan to get a Master of Music in Organ Performance and a minor in Music History.
Yes.
And at that time in our nation's history, that must have been a unique opportunity for you to be at University of Michigan.
It was. It was great because it was, 1974. I received a full fellowship. I auditioned, and I was shocked. I was told that I was one of the finest persons who auditioned that year, and there were students who had migrated from Europe, from other institutions. So it was great. It was like 80 organ majors. Mm. And I was there were three Afro-Americans, so I was one of those.
And then you subsequently have been at Hampton University and Westminster Choir College. Now, let me ask you a little bit about your experience, because obviously you've had an academic experience, but tell us about actually practicing the trade. What were the things that you've done during your career that you think were most influential in terms of developing into a conductor?
Of course, one was just private study. I've always had a passion for what I do, music. Conducting was something that I love. I sang in the choir in high school, and my high school director was also our church choir director. And he taught me about passion. He taught me about work ethic. So beyond class, I would practice, even as an organist, 4 and 5 hours a day after my class. And as a conductor, I would study conducting. And even now, I read books for professional development. So it was the outside things. And also going to many conducting classes, continuing workshops. So things outside I did, prior to my studies.
So one of the jobs that you held was the university organist at Tuskegee University.
Yes.
What was that like, being the university organist there, given the culture and the history that you were walking into at Tuskegee?
That was wonderful. We would sing some of the Tuskegee repertoire when I was a student at Booker T. Washington in Shreveport, Louisiana. And one of the great conductors, William Dawson, who had retired, was still there. He was a professor emeritus. So being an organist was great. My main job was to rehearse with the choir on a daily basis. Also, I took classes in applied music, which was organ and piano, music history, music appreciation, and etc. The choir was quite a part of the campus climate there. We would travel a lot. And as I do here, we would sing every Sunday for chapel services. In fact, Dr. Luther Foster was the president at that time, and he would come and to our engagements and concerts. So it was quite, we even did a recording at that time. So it was quite great. And we did tours as well.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Mr. Ned Lewis, the director of chapel music at the Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So one of the things that is, I think, has been very important in your career is teaching and passing on that knowledge. And that has led you to areas such as high schools, etc. Tell me a bit about your philosophy of teaching music.
One of the things when I teach music, I think about life. I think music breathes so much life. And I want students to understand the beauty of music and also the various genres of music. Most of the time when I would get students, they would love what they would hear via radio, many of the pop tunes. But I want to share a broader spectrum of music. So I would talk about not only their culture, I would start with where they were, and then I would go back to some things of history, of things that would actually bring about where we are today. Then I would talk about life, how music can be actually a part of their life. And I think, as I was sharing with one today, that once a student found that you really cared about them and your passion, it would ignite them as well.
And with that in mind, I think as you direct the chapel, and you've been doing this since 2010, it's a unique environment. It's a non-denominational experience. People are coming from a wide variety of backgrounds, countries, cultures. What do you try to achieve to try to bring the music to life in the chapel so that it supplements, if not underpins, what's being presented?
Well, I study very carefully, using my summers, again, as spent just looking at, one, the speakers that we have. Also, you mentioned, yes, the variety of people. So I look at repertoire and looking at how can I touch various segments of the population. So if it's a spiritual, if it's a gospel, if it's something maybe European nature, I try to include all of that as much as I can every Sunday. And I also look, again, at the speakers because I want to inspire them as well. So it's a kind of tedious process, but it can be fun as well.
Now, and the reason I mention it as well is because my 11-year-old daughter, when we talk about going to church or service on a Sunday, her first choice is the chapel, primarily because of the music.
Wow.
And she brings this up every single week, the music. And that really, I think, is why I wanted to emphasize that, because for an 11-year-old, she really connects her spirituality now to chapel, but just as importantly to the music and the songs and the stories that they tell. And I just wonder if you're in your experience, as you've been to several different churches, et cetera, if you've seen that maybe in a younger group of people, especially being on a college campus.
I think that we're a little different. I try to be a little different. I do take it very seriously. And so in preparing, it's a lot of preparation. And I want to know what each song tells, what the story, how can I convey this message? How can I convey to maybe a person that's my age, but how can I convey to a person of your daughter's age? How can we come together and have a consensus? How can I have something for everyone that's meaningful? And I think sometimes when we become one-dimensional, you lose your audience. But when you can become more inclusive, then everybody can walk away with something that they can take away that said, that inspired me, or that particular piece inspired me.
You've performed at the White House on three different occasions.
Yes.
Tell me what that was like, being in the White House and performing.
Wow. Yeah, that was incredible, incredible dream. My first opportunity was done actually by one of your former staff members who recommended us. It was for the anniversary of the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. And we were all excited. We actually sang as guests were coming in. But they would stop. And so we had a chance to see anyone you could think of. But I think what was really moving was toward the end, when so many guests would come and tears were in their eyes. And one actor said, "I can't believe you just really ministered to us at the White House." He just stuck around and shook his head. And of course, meeting the Obamas was just phenomenal, just to shake their hands. And there's one person has that picture on their wall. They just talk about it all the time. So it was a great, great event for us. And then to be invited back to other occasions. Mm-hmm. And one time the staff said, we were thinking about one choir. We're going to do one program for Black History. We want one choir. And the choir we thought about was the Andrew Rankin Chapel Choir.
Oh, that's absolutely excellent. Yeah. Now, I have my favorites, as you know.
Yes.
And He Bless My Soul is probably the one yes. song that I've heard in chapel. And in the manner in which it's performed and rendered, I just think is so uplifting. And I have now heard that song several different places, and my standard is still hearing it in Andrew Rankin Chapel. Tell me a little bit about your conducting of that piece in particular and why it's so different. What about the manner in which you do it makes it so unique?
For one thing, I met the composer, Anita Watkins-Stevens. I met her at a conference. When I look at compositions, particular maybe gospel pieces, I look at different voices. So I go and I listen, and there was one voice that I heard that really touched me. So I was wondering, how can I take that and make it my own? So I would just practice, play, and then from there, pray, and just wanted to give it the best of how would God give it to me to interpret.
Yeah, I've recently lost a dear friend, and that is still something that really just touches me and inspires me. It touches me and inspires me in moments of, you know, being down, and even in moments of being high, getting you to be grateful. And I think I like the idea of you ministering through the music. I think that's absolutely critical.
Thank you.
As you think about the students and succession, are you seeing as much interest from students in gospel music, in being in a chapel choir, and what are you doing to continue to cultivate that interest?
Yes, one of the things, of course, is letting them know that I care about their recommendations. I care about some of their experiences. I talk to them. I want them to become a part of the choir, not just as a member, but an intricate part. So I stress leadership, and then I ask them what they like, and we look at that, and then we have a compromise. Sure, I can do some of the pieces, but would you do this? And we come together as one. And when I hear students say, we sing in our high school choir this, and I like this particular piece, that helps. So, and I also try to give them something that they can take away, not just what they have done in their churches, but something they can look at academia as well, some of the classics that they can take away, that they can get a whole educational piece in their music ministry, Howard.
And lastly, as we wrap up, when you think of Negro spirituals how you weave those in, what is your thought process about the use of the Negro spirituals in the chapel renditions?
Well, I loved it. I went to Fisk, Jubilee Singers. I told you Tuskegee. I met tremendous composers. When I think about life, when I think about my parents who grew up in the South, when I think about my father who labored, when I think about my mom, when I think about many of the church peoples, those spirituals were the ones that carried them through. I look at the meaning. For instance, I've been viewed. I haven't done that particular piece here, but when I look at that, my soul's been anchored. Those kind of messages can really carry us through. And I don't want our generation to forget those pieces. So I think it's imperative that I continue to keep the legacy of Howard and using those in our services.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Mr. Ned Lewis, and he is the director of chapel music at the Andrew Rankin Memorial Chapel here at Howard University. And I have to tell you, you've certainly ministered to my soul on more than one occasion, and
Thank you.
I'm always grateful. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.